I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Start the day with Boomer and Geo, mornings 6 to 10 on WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the fan, WFAN.
Sunday morning, everybody. We are back on the fan. I am Ricky Ricardo, filling in today for Mark Malusis to get your Sunday morning going. Alex Azarm will produce our fine radio program. We'll be here until noon today, until 11:45 this morning. We'll get you going. A little cup of coffee, a little breakfast, a little sports talk, a little TV talk, a little bit of everything. On this first Sunday, Withdrawal Sunday, the first Sunday without even the thought of a football game for quite a long time. So we will get through it together. 888-808-1019 if you care to join us. We'd love to talk to you, so get on the horn. All right, let's right off the bat, several little topics that I want to lay on the table for you here. Obviously, it's now spring training day number 4. An interesting Saturday yesterday. We're in Tampa. So we're right down the block from Steinbrenner Field. The clubhouse opens on Sundays at 8 a.m. So they're just getting started over at Yankee Camp right about now. Guys coming in after some Sunday breakfast and getting ready for the Sunday workout. Yesterday was a very, very productive day. And I say that because we got a glimpse of a couple of guys that could be key pieces to the early April and May Yankees, and that's Ryan Yarbrough and Will Warren. Because those two guys are more than likely, and maybe it's either Yarbrough or Weathers that takes up one of the spots in the starting rotation early in the season, while Carlos Rodon, told the reporters, couldn't even button his shirt last year. And, you know, nobody really made a big issue of the injury, of the pain he was going through late in the year, but it was pretty bad. And he worked his way through. He bulldogged his way through it to the best of his ability. But he's on his way back. He told me he's on schedule. Doesn't want to really pinpoint a date because, you know, then it's, there's a setback. But hopefully we get Carlos Rodon back in early May or late April, early May. You know, that's the target right there. But it was good to see guys like Will Warren and Ryan Yarbrough yesterday facing live hitters and facing top-notch Yankee live hitters. Paul Goldschmidt, Aaron Judge, Jazz Chisholm. And looking good. And a great mindset by Will Warren. Ryan Yarbrough is an established veteran. So these are the kind of things, folks, you're asking yourself, well, what exactly do they do this early in camp? Well, there's a lot of fundamental work. And now we're starting to see live hitting for the first time yesterday. And our own pitchers facing our own hitters, which is always very, very interesting because you never want to, you know, get too tight. You know, have guys with all kinds of protection on and pitchers that really can't make some of the strikeout put away pitches that they would want to make to regular hitters in games because you don't want to get anywhere near, you know, nicking an Aaron Judge or a Paul Goldschmidt or any one of the guys that would be in a regular starting lineup. So Yankee talk, obviously we can talk Yankees here 24/7, 365, you know that. We'll talk to Omar Minaya. That's right, Omar Minaya, the special assistant to general manager Brian Cashman. He will join us in the 9 o'clock hour this morning. And we'll get from Omar Or at least we'll ask him, and hopefully we'll get an answer on the famous run it back controversy, which is no longer anything that's really hovering over anyone's head, because it is a concept now that has been embraced. And there was a question asked of Aaron Boone yesterday during his presser after the workout, which I thought was interesting. And Booney thought it was interesting, too, because one of the reporters said, because of the fact that the Yankees are going to lose for a good 2.5-3 weeks as part of this camp, so many players, because they've got a good, that's a long list of players and key guys that are going to be away from training camp to go away for the World Baseball Classic. Boone was asked yesterday if he thinks that the unity of this team, the fact that this team knows each other because they're quote-unquote running it back and it's basically the same guys, that maybe that fact right there helps with so many players leaving. It's not like they're trying to develop a chemistry which is going to be interrupted by 3 weeks of the World Baseball Classic. So it's not like you're trying to integrate new pieces into the mix. These guys already know each other. They're comfortable with each other. So maybe the fact that they're quote-unquote running it back is actually a very positive thing for the Yankees as compared to some other clubs that are trying to integrate new guys, and then all of a sudden, bang, here at the end of the month and into March, you're going to break up that flow, and that may carry into the regular season at least early on in April and May. And you don't have that issue with the Yankees because all these guys are already, you know, very, very comfortable with each other. It's a good group. It really is. And I wouldn't lie to you if it wasn't. If I sensed that there was any negativity in that clubhouse, I'd be the first one to tell you. But there isn't. These guys actually, you know, this is a good group. They get along really well, and all under the leadership of one number 99, their team captain, Aaron Judge, and some key veterans around that clubhouse. Cole, you can tell who the guys are. And having Cole there is always, you know, he walks in front of the group of the pitchers and they follow. It's like Mama Duck and the little duck, you know, little duckies behind. It's wonderful to see leadership in action sometimes. And you got guys like Cole and Goldschmidt, who's a veteran leader on this team, and young guys that are starting to develop into leadership roles, like an Austin Wells, for example. But there's going to be several guys that leave for World Baseball Classic duty to several different camps. Caballero going to Panama, Team Panama. Great Britain will have Jazz Chisholm. You have several guys that are going to the Dominican team, including Austin Wells. And you're saying, Austin Wells to the Dominican? Yeah. Austin Wells' mom is Dominican. So Austin Wells qualifies to play for the Dominican Republic team. So he'll be going there. Obviously, Bednar and Judge and Goldschmidt will be leaving for Team USA. But in a weird sort of way, and maybe I'm just looking at some sort of light at the end of the tunnel or trying to put a positive spin on this. If you want to accuse me of that, then go ahead. But just maybe it's a little advantage for the Yankees having the unified group back with the breakup of the whole thing of the whole mix for about 3 weeks here coming up at the end of the month of February and into March because of the World Baseball Classic. So any Yankee talk obviously is welcome. And like I said, important yesterday to see a Will Warren and to talk to a Will Warren, Ryan Yarbrough, veteran facing live hitters. But, you know, Will Warren, who many say, well, he may be suited to go to the bullpen when some of the regulars come back into the starting rotation, and Booney put the kibosh on that quick yesterday. Look, it still may happen. Who knows? But they are getting him ready to be a starter. He is a starting pitcher, and that's the way that the Yankees look at Will Warren going into the 2026 season. Now, the quarterly meetings, the owners' meetings, has come to a conclusion down in Palm Beach, and I brought this up when I was doing the overnights late in the week into Friday morning. And for those of you that weren't awake at, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning when I discussed this, we'll bring it back up again. But, you know, several new things that came out of the owners' meetings, baseball owners' meetings in Palm Beach that went on here for the last few days. And we'll review that. Talking to Louis Rojas yesterday, look, the coaches are going to have to stay in the coach's box until the pitchers release the ball. And you're saying to yourself, what's the big deal with that? Well, baseball seems to think that third base coaches, especially, sometimes on the first base side, but more on third base, they seem to think that a lot of pitches are being, you know, sent to the hitters, or the information about what's coming from third base coaches. And they think, and it's been mandated now, that keeping the coaches in the coach's box will curtail some sort of sign stealing or, you know, giving pitches away, which I think is more the fault of the actual pitcher himself if he's given what he's going to throw, if he's given it up. Maybe it's the pitcher that needs to look inside himself and not so much the coaches. But it's something that's been going on in baseball forever. Stealing signs and trying to, you know, find out what who's tipping pitches, and what's coming. It's all been part of the game. Now, when it's done electronically or in a nefarious manner, obviously, that, you know, you have to curtail that. But the human element to it has always existed. And that is rule number one this year that's going to be implemented, keeping the coaches in the coach's box. And, you know, what I told Louis Rojas yesterday is, I hope your reflexes are as better or as good as ever, or better than ever, because you get a Giancarlo Stanton or an Aaron Judge shooting line drive foul balls toward the third base coach's box. You can't now. Now, Rojas, who, you know, when Stanton comes to the plate, Louis Rojas is about 10, 12 feet behind the coach's box towards the stands where you've got protection over there. And he's got a shot to move away from a line drive coming off the bat, a foul ball from Giancarlo, for example. And it's not just Stanton, but, I mean, when Stanton hits a line drive foul down the third baseline, that third base coach has to move quickly. Or if not, he's in big, big trouble. And now, instead of positioning themselves way, way back, a few feet towards the stands, they're going to be in the coach's box until the baseball is delivered. So they're going to be moving quick. The minute that ball leaves the pitcher's hand, you're going to see coaches backtrack real, real fast. And obviously, the big thing that came out of the owners' meetings is, and I guess some of this leaked, but there was some, you know, credible reporters that were there. And Big Mac brought this up yesterday, when he was doing his Saturday morning show. But some of the numbers being thrown around for a salary cap and a salary floor, which, let's face it, folks, I hope it's just a baseline start to a negotiation. Because if they're going to hardball the union with a salary cap of $240 million, then we're not going to get anywhere fast. And Scott Boras, who is the super agent, but basically runs... Scott Boras runs the player side. Let's face it. There is no way on God's earth that Scott Boras or Tony Clark or anyone else involved in the player side of this is going to acquiesce to a $240 million salary cap. Now, if you tell me, look, it's just a number to start negotiating and it'll probably end up at $340 million. Or closer to $400 million. Remember the Dodgers with luxury taxes and things, it's almost $500 million when you add in the taxes. Now, for number's sake, it's probably just a little bit over or right around the $400 million line for the Dodger payroll this year. And all of those contracts will probably be grandfathered into whatever agreement they finally do come up with. But to start at $240 million, they're going to be laughed at, ridiculed at the table. Are you serious? $240 million as a salary cap? Now, the floor.
Some crimes are so shocking, they don't just make headlines. They forever change our society. I'm Katie Ring, host of America's Most Infamous Crimes. Each week, I take on one of the most notorious criminal cases. Each case unfolds across multiple episodes. Release every Tuesday through Thursday. from the first sign that something was wrong to the moment the truth came out or didn't. Listen to and follow America's Most Infamous Crimes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
At 150 to 160 million, which is the rumored numbers that have come out. Okay, now that's a little bit more realistic. Because you're talking about the Miami Marlins having the lowest payroll, which I believe last time I checked was somewhere in the mid-60s. Yeah, 60 million. Yeah, the same number that Kyle Tucker's going to make in 1 year with the Dodgers. So you're kind of twisting their arm and forcing the lower spending teams to double or triple their payrolls. So that, on the surface, seems a little bit more viable than the other side, the top at $240 million. They're going to have to go way, way, way above that. So if you want to chime in on that, your take on the potential work stoppage in baseball, which may cloud a very, very good season in 2026. Coming off a wonderful World Series. And baseball is in a renaissance period right now. And it could be clouded by season-long talk of what may happen at the end of the year on December 1st. When, if things don't change, things may be, get shut down completely, and we may have a quite a long work stoppage in Major League Baseball. But for now, it's just part of the discussion. We always discuss, I always bring up something that's not sports related, and this is, in a way, and it's also some really good TV. So yesterday, the dunk contest, three-point, the skills, the whole thing in the NBA was early. Now, it's this particular season, it's kind of a logjam for the people at NBC and Peacock, because they've got all the NBA stuff, including the All-Star game tonight, which stop. They're trying to figure out a way to make this interesting again. The NBA against the world, and it's four different teams, and it's almost like a little mini playoff. And I will probably just peek at it for a second, but does it really have my interest, this new format of the NBA All-Star weekend? Absolutely not. And the dunk contest, a bunch of young rookies. Congratulations to the kid Johnson from the Miami Heat that won the dunk contest. That was all right. Not any dunk that we've never seen done before. Dame Lillard winning the three-point shooting contest. But it happened in the middle of the afternoon. Right? When TNT had this thing, it was TNT All-Star Saturday night. They made a big deal about it was at least much more out there as a standalone event. But with the Olympics coverage by NBC and Peacock, there's not enough hours in the day for all the Olympic coverage that they're trying to give you, and at the same time have standout coverage of NBA All-Star Weekend. So Adam Silver cannot be, and I get it, it's a new deal, and they'll get by it, and there won't be Olympics next year or the following. And who knows if they collide again at any point schedule-wise, and they'll deal with that, cross that bridge when they get to it. But for now, with all the Olympic stuff, the NBA All-Star Weekend's kind of been buried. And on top of the fact that it's been buried because of logistics at NBC and Peacock, nobody cares. Is there really any interest? What would you do, folks, to kind of rekindle the interest in NBA All-Star Weekend? If you want to chime in on that, you're more than welcome to. And as I was talking about television, I got a chance last night, because it was kind of boring, to tell you the truth, what was going on in Los Angeles with the NBA. So I watched a wonderful, it's called Soul Power, is the name of a four-part series. I think it was on Prime. And it popped right up on my home screen, and I said, yeah, I want to watch this. But it's a four-part documentary on the history of the ABA. And for those of you that aren't old enough to remember, the American Basketball Association, which is the birthplace of the, at that time, New York Nets, who played out on Long Island, the years with Rick Barry, the years with Julius Erving, and the ups and downs of the league itself, it is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And if you've got time, I highly recommend, if you're a basketball fan, a New York sports fan that lived through the early to mid-70s into the late 70s with the NBA right after the Knicks won the championships, 69-70 and 72-73, the NBA really went into a lull of boring, you know, walk it up basketball. And the ABA with the red, white, and blue ball and a completely different attitude about how they wanted to play the game was a much, much more exciting product. But as a young fledgling league with all kinds of financial issues, it's very, very interesting. I learned so much from watching this thing about how the league was able to survive all those years with franchises moving from one city to another and dropping out and owners that would run out of money. And then finally at the end, after the Nets and Nuggets tried to apply for entry into the NBA without telling the rest of the league that they were trying to leave. And Roy Bowe not being able to afford, you know, Julius Erving anymore. And, you know, Erving being basically sold to the Philadelphia 76ers so the Nets would have the money to be able to get into the NBA. That whole story in detail, in this four-part series about the ABA called Soul Power. If you're a basketball fan and you were around for those great years when the Nets in this city, and they played out at the Nassau Coliseum, the Nets were a much more exciting product than the Knicks in the mid-70s. You are going to love this documentary. I highly recommend it. You're going to see people like Dave DeBusch. Remember, Dave DeBusch was the commissioner at a time of the ABA. And so many guys that ended up being superstars in the NBA that got their start in the ABA and with a different set of when I say a different set of rules, it was a different approach to playing the game. Much more wide open. They had the three-point shot, which originated in the ABA. I think you'll find it fascinating if you're a basketball fan. It was much more interesting than the current NBA All-Star Weekend.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, I sit down with people who don't just dream big, they build big. From Mark Cuban to Mel Robbins, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with me, Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast available now.